My guest, William Shambra, is a leading figure in conservative philanthropy. He's the former director of programs at the Bradley Foundation, which has supported conservative think tanks and publications, as well as many education and community programs. He now directs the Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal at the conservative think tank, the Hudson Institute. The center has held conferences about the goals and methods of philanthropy. William Shambra, welcome to Fresh Air. I'd like to start by quoting something from a flyer for a symposium that your group sponsored. The symposium was called When Nonprofits Attack. and the flyer asked the question, is activism a charitable activity? How far should charities go in engaging in politics? What made you even want to ask that question?
The reason we chose the topic was that increasingly nonprofits in the United States are becoming interested in the shorthand is advocacy, and what that means is attempts to influence public policy. Nonprofits are often funded to do this, of course, by foundations of various sorts on both the right and the left, because it's a way of using what foundations understand to be their own limited resources to have a maximum impact on public policy. And When Nonprofits Attack was just a kind of a gimmicky title to suggest that nonprofits in fact are, the shorthand would be this, that in the old days, the warm, fuzzy, cuddly nonprofits that just do charitable activities suddenly turn into political activists, sort of like the animals on when animals attack. It was just a clever way of getting at this point of political activism, increased political activism on the part of nonprofits.
Well, getting back to the question posed in that flyer, how far should charities go in engaging in politics, is there a point that you consider to be going too far?
Well, there's a point that the law considers going too far, but the law is extraordinarily generous in what it permits. The difficulty is this. The nonprofit sector is increasingly reliant on public funding at all levels of government for its source of revenue. It's less and less dependent on foundations, less and less dependent on private charitable contributions. The difficulty is that as nonprofits become more politically active, it's almost invariably in one direction, and that is in the direction of acquiring more funding for public programs, more funding for themselves. They begin to appear to the public to be less charitable and more sort of political activist, politically active. And that if the public comes to see the American nonprofit sector as primarily a realm of political activity, and political activity aimed at raising taxes and increasing government, I think that would be a gross disservice to the sector.
I think critics and supporters of conservative causes are impressed at how very effective conservative foundations have been in funding a network of conservative think tanks and conservative media that have served as a megaphone for conservative messages. So is it fair to say that there's never been anything like that before, like the network of foundations that have funded this network of conservative think tanks and media?
Well, no, that's not quite historically accurate. I think at the turn of the 20th century, with the rise of the first big foundations like Carnegie and Rockefeller and the Russell Sage Foundation, with the establishment of some think tanks like the National Bureau of Economic Research and the Brookings Institution and other such institutions, this was the first time that you had foundations and some serious think tanks and nonprofits devoted to what they understood to be influencing public policy. We don't think of it as an effort to influence public policy because they themselves denied that. They themselves claimed that they were being nonpartisan above the political fray. They weren't seeking to achieve some sort of advantage for one political party or the other. they were just preparing the facts, and the political leaders, the elites, would then take the facts and make public policy accordingly. Now, looking back from a time, let's say, of a slightly more conservative bent, you can see that almost invariably these objective facts and the elites that employed them pointed toward an increase in federal power, an increase in regulation, a substantial growth of government at all levels, and a substantial harnessing of the private sector to government regulation of all sorts. So conservatives, and this incidentally came over time to, and the same foundations that funded those think tanks ended up funding a lot of the university programs and public policy. And so through the 30s and 40s, you ended up with a very distinctly liberal bent to the universities, a progressive bent to the universities, which in the 60s then took a kind of a radical turn. So looking at this constellation of forces, let's say in the 60s, the conservatives began to see, well, wait a minute, all the big foundations are liberal. Most of the think tanks are liberal. There's a famous episode, incidentally, in which conservatives were criticizing Richard Nixon for employing experts from the Brookings Institution to help him formulate his first policies. And Nixon simply said to them, look, you know, this is all there is. It's the only game in town. So in the 60s, conservatives looked at this constellation of forces and decided that they needed to establish their own. And they did. You know, they then went on to fund a number of think tanks and nonprofits devoted to public policy, like the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, the one I work for, the Hudson Institute. But these were not original, new, shockingly different. It was just the conservative effort to kind of counterbalance the liberal predominance in this sphere.
There's a criticism of some of the, you know, conservative think tanks and publication that they're really more about advocating an ideology than about an open-minded sense of scholarship or journalism. And I wonder how you'd respond to that.
Right. Well, as I say, that depends on the basis for that charge is that if you're a progressive think tank, then you are nonpartisan, open-minded, and above the fray. If you're a conservative think tank, you're partisan, narrow-minded, and engaged in the dirty business of politics. That depends on, as I say, a way of describing the various political forces going back to the progressive era at the beginning of the 20th century. And it's an unfair way of describing conservative think tanks as opposed to progressive or liberal think tanks, I think.
My guest is William Shambra. He directs the Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal at the Hudson Institute. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is William Shambra. He directs the Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal at the conservative think tank, the Hudson Institute. In dealing with the kind of social programs that the Bradley Foundation has funded, because it funds those kinds of programs in addition to, you know, think tanks and conservative publications, in thinking about that, and in also thinking about the kind of philanthropy that your group examines, where do you think the line should be between the type of social program that the government should fund and the type of social program that should be funded strictly by philanthropy?
Well, I think part of the difficulty in the next 10 years or so as we look to constrain public resources is going to be to figure out ways of turning over some of these social functions to private philanthropy and to charitable support. The line is I think government does certain things very well. It writes checks very well. It pays Social Security. It pays Medicare. It pays Medicaid. When the function is writing a check, it does pretty well. When the function is trying to change a life, trying to take someone by the hand and put them on a better path, Government doesn't do very well at that. That is something that the private charitable sector does much better.
Do you think that we run the risk of having the wealthiest individuals in our country and the best endowed foundations in the country controlling, or at least having a lot, perhaps too much influence on public policy and public debate?
Well, that's a question that's raised very sharply, of course, by this new development, the gift by Warren Buffett of his great portion of his fortune to the Gates Foundation. I think that we're going to have to ask that question in a way that we haven't asked it before. Prior to this time, I would say this, that we've had enough diversity, enough variety of points of view supported by foundations, and that one can't say that it's the point of view of the rich versus the point of view of the poor. You've had foundations supporting all sorts of grassroots populist activities, as well as supporting wealthier. Some of the concerns that are of most interest to wealthy people. But when you suddenly have a foundation that may be worth $60 billion in perpetuity, that does raise a new and interesting question. We're going to have to wrestle with that, I think.
What is the question exactly? What are you concerned about?
Well, suddenly we have in our midst a foundation. To put it in perspective, right now foundations give away something like roughly $33 billion a year. The Gates Foundation, with this new gift, will be giving away $3 billion. In other words, roughly, 1/11 or 1/10 of the total charitable giving of foundations in America. That's a very substantial portion of giving. And what the Gates Foundation then wants to pursue is pretty much what will be pursued, I dare say. Now, so far, they have only sort of timidly gotten into the issue of public policy. They have confined themselves, by and large, to health and public policy, public health and medical concerns in the third world. But they have, in fact, gotten involved in some education reform initiatives in the United States, especially the matter of reforming the American high school. They will be drawn, I predict this, I think they'll be drawn more and more into public policy over the next 10 or 12 years, more and more into the effort to influence government to do what they want. And that, as I say, is going to present a very interesting challenge to American democratic accountability for a body of wealth that size.
I read that in your basement you have a 1950s Republican election poster hanging up. I'd like you to describe the poster and tell us why you have it.
Well, this was this came up in the context of a call I got from the Christian Science Monitor during the last election to write an article as part of a series talking about the dangers of polarization in politics just before the 2004 presidential election. And I had to sort of point out that I don't believe that polarization is a serious problem. I think one of the things that we need is sharply defined ideas and sharply defined debate in politics. And the notion that somehow our politics has recently become much nastier than it's ever been before, I found to be not a plausible argument. And I recalled, as I was thinking about this, I recalled this poster from the early 50s. It's a picture of an elephant with the GOP banner draped on it, and the elephant is stepping on two guys, one of whom is Joseph Stalin and one of whom is labeled New Dealism. And the title underneath is "Let's Step on 'Em." We've always had periods of politics where the language can be pretty rough. By and large, as I say, it's not an unhealthy thing that we have sharply defined issues and sharp sharply defined debates, and insofar as think tanks and foundations contribute to that on both sides, you know, I think that's a healthy thing, a good thing.
Well, William Schambra, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I certainly appreciate it.
William Schambra directs the Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal at the Hudson Institute.